Today, we're focusing on a crucial topic, the deep connection between trauma and addiction. We discuss early influences, coping mechanisms, common patterns, and effective treatment strategies. Today's guest is Dr. Rob Kelly, also known as the Recovery Expert, from Manchester, England. His journey is a fascinating blend of music, academia, and overcoming personal battles, particularly with alcoholism. His famous phrase, "The problem is not our drinking, it is our thinking," guide his mission. Stay tuned for insight that could reshape the way you understand recovery. Welcome back to another episode of The Mindful Space. Today we have Dr. Rob Kelly. How are you?
I am amazing, Michelle. How are you?
Great. I'm so glad we got everything to work out and this is happening.
Excellent. Hold on to your seats, guys. This is going to be the best one ever.
Behind the scenes, usually chaotic, but not like today was a little extra. So today we're discussing a very particular topic. We're talking about trauma, but we're also linking it to rehab or addiction. So we're going to talk about trauma and addiction and how they go hand in hand. Can we dive a little bit into that connection? Can you shed some light on why these two go hand in hand?
Well, of course, everybody has childhood trauma, first of all, even if you don't think you do, you do. Definitely. So childhood trauma and addiction go hand in hand because they live mostly in the subconscious brain trauma. Subconscious brain is the childhood trauma. The amygdala, which is our smoke alarm for the alarm, gets triggered real easy. But with alcoholics and addicts, we're more sensitive to trauma. Like, if you're an alcoholic or addict, guys, and you're listening to this, you'll understand what I'm going to say going through childhood and teenage. We hear things different. And that's connected with the childhood trauma that we have. So let me give you a, for instance, me and my brother are stood on the kitchen table. We're not supposed to be on the kitchen table. And my mother walks in and she says to both of us, "Get down off that table before your dad gets in. Get down." My brother jumps off and I freeze. Or I've heard, "Get out of that table, you stupid idiot." And that's because of my childhood trauma being molested, being abandoned, being not being validated and approved, other stuff we went through. So as the addiction takes off, so there's two kinds of addictions, alcoholism. So alcoholics are born, drug addicts are made. Then we have the addictive personality. So with that addictive personality, we are all or nothing. So when we latch onto the childhood trauma, it has a prevalence in the subconscious brain to speak to and come forward more. So unless we sort the childhood trauma out and try and come from the conscious brain, this guy is always running the show and you will always suffer in your adult life for the things you went through as a child.
Got it. And you know, you hear that a lot, right? Like, oh, addictive personality. What is that? What's the difference between somebody that has that personality or doesn't? Is that something you're born with, something environmentally influenced by?
Both, really, a bit of both. When you have the addictive personality, the easy sign is you're either all in or you're all out. That's the lamer way to put it. With the addicted personality and the addicted brain, you'll find either huge drug addiction or huge business success, huge family life or loss of family. We're either all in or we're all out. But let's look at the alcoholic for a second. Now, alcoholics have a predisposition. So that it's been passed down from generation. Drug addiction, heart disease, inflammation, arthritis cannot be passed down. It's an impossibility. Alcoholism can, because it affects three parts of the brain, the hypothalamus, the amygdala, and the basal ganglia, that differ from any other brain.
So interesting. When we understand the roots, right, it's crucial to understand, like you mentioned, that everybody has child trauma. How can this impact the likelihood of developing the addiction? And what role does neurobiology play in this connection?
It's a pretty huge connection, yeah. So as we go through life, let's say, for instance, a child, a young girl is in a house, 5, 6, 10, 12, doesn't make any difference. And what she sees every night is dad's an alcoholic. He comes home and he's drunk most of the time. He ends up with a fight with mom. Maybe it's violent. And they go to bed. The child growing up in that house will learn two things. First of all, that listen for the key in the door. It's what is childhood trauma. If the key goes straight in the lock, you can stay. It's going to be okay. If he jangles around the lock so it doesn't go in first time, that's drunk. Get out the way. It's going to be violence. So what happens with that young girl as she goes into her teens and finally meets a guy and moves out? She's going to attract, because we attract what we think we are worth, whether you like it or not. She will attract the guy that ends up being an alcoholic or a drug abuser and ends up beating her. Now, the reason is because of learned behavior and the trauma she's seen. She thinks that's natural. So to the point that if she was to meet a great guy, a kind guy who provides for her, who protects her, she will self-sabotage that relationship because she doesn't feel, it doesn't feel right, and she doesn't think she's good enough for that relationship.
Yeah, and that's very important. I agree with you completely. We do attract what we feel like we're worth, whether we want to accept it or not. And that's why I feel it's so important to understand your trauma or where you're coming from, so then you can kind of break that cycle or learn how to cope with it or learn new coping mechanisms. When we talk about addiction and coping mechanism, can you mention some specific coping mechanisms that might help people or individuals with their trauma histories and addiction?
Yeah, I'll give you three things to change your brain tomorrow morning, guys, when you get up. But we have to look at, first of all, the addiction and the trauma brain. You know, we act differently and we see things differently. So what we see usually is how we feel. So if I watch a sad movie, I feel sad. What we hear, we believe to be the truth. So if we're hearing mom and dad lie from an early age, then we're going to start lying as we grow up because we don't know anything else. Coping mechanisms, there are billions. I'm sure there are guys to cope with that. The first thing I would suggest to anybody is talk to somebody who knows what they're doing, who knows about childhood trauma. Not all therapists do. If you're an addict or an alcoholic, make sure your therapist has been an addict or alcoholic in the past, because there is a correlation between both. You can't understand what an alcoholic goes through if you've not been in them shoes. Any other illness, any other depression, anything, yeah, you can do that. Go to college for 3 years, you can deal. Alcoholism and drug addiction are different. So the coping mechanisms start in the morning, guys. So one thing I want to tell you is lack of oxygen equals presence of disease. Mm-hmm. So we only breathe 25%, 30% of our lung capacity on a daily basis. The only reason we feel good going to the gym is not because of the exercise, it's because of this in between the exercise. We do not take enough oxygen in. So how does this affect the human body? All cancers, growths, everything like that in the body grow in a hypoxic area of the body, which means there's no oxygen there. Mm-hmm. So when you get up in the morning, one of the reasons why no human being has ever woke up laughing is lack of oxygen. So if you can imagine between 2 and 5 in the morning with a natural circadian rhythm sleep, it's when the body is in the most repair. It's also when people die of natural causes, because everything's at a lower rate. Everything's slowed down. The repair can begin. So when we wake up, the first thing we want to do is we want to get that oxygen inside every single blood cell if we can. So stand next to the bed. Just grab 2 minutes, guys. Grab hold of the bed head. Hold there and do you want to do 10 exaggerated breaths in? Do that 10 times. That is a coping mechanism. Now you feel clear. You feel great. You're ready for the day. You'll go a bit dizzy. Walk into the bathroom. Stand 6 feet away from the mirror. Don't go to the mirror like this. Women are always worse when they put the makeup on. When you're this far away from a mirror, you see all the blemishes. If you stand 6 foot away from the mirror, you don't see any blemishes, which means that when you go out to people during the day, how many people do you walk out to, Michelle, and go, hey, how are you doing? Good to see you. They don't do that. They see you from a distance.
Yeah.
So they see your natural beauty. Look in the mirror and say, I love you 10 times. Just look, don't say any other affirmations. After you've done that, if you're right-handed brushing your teeth, do a week with left, week with right, week with left, week with right. That will change neural pathways, become a coping mechanism, and will start the day off on a winning step.
I love the, I think I've heard that one before, where you switch the brushing your teeth with the left. And I'm even trying to do it now, and it doesn't look natural. It doesn't seem natural. What? But I heard how that can do the newer pathways, the new ones, newer transmitters, and just kind of help you with the coping. And I love the breathing.
Yeah, the breathing's amazing. You know, it's just, it really is amazing. It's very important that you do this every morning, because it is a game changer. And not many people think it is, but Anything we do outside the circuitry of self-destruction through addiction or childhood trauma will divert the neuropathology. So any alcoholic, and when I say alcoholic, just drugs as well, which gets a mouthful after a bit. Any alcoholic has about 80% self-sabotage neural pathways, and there are billions, and 20% GERT. So given a choice that comes out of the subconscious brain, when the prefrontal cortex screams, give me an answer to my problem, it's usually going to be the wrong answer that the prefrontal cortex delivers, unfortunately. So we have to change them, self-sabotaging. So about 300 neural pathways die every day. If we create 300 more with the teeth, the breathing, eventually, the good ones are going to take over the bad ones.
Yeah, it seems like such small change, but like, in the long run, like you said, if we just create a new habit, it can be very rewardful, at least for neurons.
Our human beings love puns. You know, I don't know whether you've ever been out as a young kid or teenager, been to the seaside with a load of friends. You all get on the bus, you go down there, you have a great time, you get back on the bus. Which seat do you sit in? You sit in the seat, you travel there. And then become that repeated pattern of either self-destruction or success in life.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. When we talk about this, it also reminds me of patterns, right, and commonalities. In your work, have you noticed any commonalities or among individuals who have experienced trauma and subsequently struggled with addiction, like some patterns of behavior?
Yeah, of course. It's also self-destruction. I was never good enough at all. I was never tall enough, blonde enough, rich enough, or thin enough. And if I enough was never in my vocabulary, I always wanted more. So we see that pattern in alcoholics over and over again, including myself. One thing I have today that a lot of people don't is enough. I have enough today. And once we get to that period in our life, whatever success looks like for you, I'm not just talking monetary, I'm talking best dad. I was estranged from my daughter for 28 years. That being a dad again 2 or 3 years ago was phenomenal. That was my success. Despite the millions of dollars I earn every year, that was my success. So we look for them patterns. We look to self-sabotage. We get to a certain point. And what happens with the basal ganglia? It's kind of our repetition strengthened, confirmed part of the brain. So let's say a pilot, for instance, needs 10,000 hours in the air before he can fly a commercial jet. That's just time in the air. That's just a repetition of the brain doing things, confirms. And then before we know it, it can fly that plane without even thinking about it. But what happens in addiction tied to childhood trauma, if you can imagine a face of a clock, like we get well, we want to start off again, 10 after we get the car back, then we get the job back, the wife moves back in, the kid's awesome, and about 10 to the hour, we'll self-sabotage. Whether that be food, sex, porn, drugs, it makes no difference. And it's the repair of that basal ganglia that will help reduce the trauma. So then patterns are always there once they're ingrained into the brain. But you have to go back and look specifically for the traumas from childhood. And you have to know what a childhood trauma is, because it's not a plane crash, or I should say it's not just a plane crash, a car crash, a divorce. It goes way deeper than that, to somewhere somebody has said something to you that's stuck. Okay. Like you're never good enough, or you're too fat. You know, oh, let's look at Fatty. You know, that was said to my sister many years ago. My dad joking, he used to go, "Hey, Fatty, rubber belly." She struggled with her weight for 45 years because of that. So we have to specifically look at what trauma is and how it can affect us going forward.
Yeah, we have to be conscious as parents too, what we say, right? Because for some people, bullying, bullying is not enough. That's normal. I know in your case, you're very passionate about this because you also went through addiction. Do you mind sharing a little bit more of your story? What were your triggers? How did it start? And how did you put an end to it? Or what was that aha moment that you had that you said, okay, I need to go get help?
Two aha moments, which I'll get to in a second. Well, first of all, there was alcoholism in my family, but nobody said anything. Because back in the day, going back the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you won't see if you're alcoholism in the family. If you can't trace it back three generations, by the way, you're not alcoholic, you abuse alcohol. But the sayings were, grandfather liked to drink. You know, so you never heard of alcoholism. Yeah. My first drink on stage with the musical family at the age of 9 in Liverpool, England, is when I first took. And once again, throughout the school and college lives, you know, that pattern and that alcoholism took over me completely. And I did some crazy things, had two children, beautiful wife, you know, cars, everything. And within, you know, a short time, I'd lost everything and ended up homeless and was homeless on the streets of Manchester for 14 months. I was what's called a spiritual awakening on the streets, and I got off the streets. And then what I said to myself is, for the rest of my life, because nobody knew. The doctor would say, hey, listen, just stop drinking. I think you're an alcoholic, or go to that AA meeting to think, you know. Listen, alcoholism is the only self-diagnosed illness in the world. 10 DWIs do not make an alcoholic. Doctors, they don't know nothing about alcoholism and addiction. I'm sorry, guys, but you don't. You know, it's not a case of just stopping drinking or just stopping using drugs. It goes way deeper than that. It's the circuitry of the brain. It's the neuroscience that will help us change the brain. So eventually when I got off the streets, that's what I did for the last 30 years. I spent the rest of my life helping patients and families get through this, because you have to include the families. It's a family disease, but it's also a family recovery.
Yeah, and that's so important that you mentioned that it's a family disease, because a lot of people go through it alone, right? And they don't have the support system. And it's so important to have the unity and the family involved. I know it's not always possible, but if possible, it's very important to bring them all together. Now, when we talk about supports and networks, obviously the support role is pivotal, right? As you had just mentioned, how can a loved one bring that support? How can they best assist someone that might be going through alcoholism, for example?
Let's go through two options. Wife with husband, for instance. First thing you got to do, guys, if you think there's a problem or the husband finally admits the problem, is get help. Talk to a third party. Make sure they know. Make sure it's a good reputable person, who a doctor, psychologist, or a very, very good treatment center. And just start the dialogue, because when we don't talk about addiction, it gets worse. It's hidden under the carpet. Nobody wants to talk about it. And then there's death and fatalities and families are split up. So start talking. If you're a mom or dad listening, and you think your child is going through some addiction problems, drugs or alcohol, when he goes out, search his bedroom thoroughly. None of this, oh, it's a private bedroom. No, I would rather you search his room than you find him dead in a couple of times in the bed. There's only a couple of ways out of this, guys. You can get help. You can go to jail for the rest of your life, or you can die. And dying looks pretty good right now, where I was, you know. So start dialogue, start dialogue, start dialogue, guys. Don't be afraid. Don't stick it in the cupboard, you know, like we used to. Let's bring it out of that darkness and shed a light on it, because everybody, it's beautiful when I say this, everybody knows somebody who suffers from addiction.
Yeah.
And if you don't, by the way, it's probably you. That's what I say to people. Everybody knows somebody.
That is true. Or that someone knows of someone. You've probably heard a story. It's unfortunate in alcohol. It's a legal drug, right? It's definitely more socially acceptable. But again, if you have that addictive personality, if you've gone through trauma, you're more perceptive to get drowned in it, unfortunately. Well,
most of my guys come to me from heroin. Let's say heroin. Most of the housewives and fathers that come to me with a staunch heroin addiction started in the doctor's office with a pain pill.
Yeah.
That's how crazy the pharmaceutical companies are, and how crazy addiction can grab hold of you with that addicted brain. Remember, if you want more and more most of your life, you have the addicted brain. If you can walk in a sandwich shop and have one sandwich and walk out, I can't do that. My buddy goes, what do you want? Jimmy, what do you want? I just have a sandwich. Anything else? No. What about you, Rob? Give me two sandwiches, four bags of chips, two Cokes, and I'll take that chocolate bar. It's all or nothing, and there's another pattern that we have to watch for.
Yeah, it's because, again, it's not just about drugs and alcohol. It's just having that addictive personality in general. Very important. When we talk about, I don't want to use the word fixing, but if I want to talk about effective strategies in your professional experience, what has been some of them? Just therapy, medicine therapy, rehab centers. What do you recommend? What have you seen that actually succeeds expectation?
So let's look at the treatment centers. On average, the success rate is about 5%. We're 97, by the way. But you look at 12-step rooms, they're probably about 3%. You can't fix drug addiction with a drug. Now, if you're using Suboxone and the likes to come off drugs as a taper, you've got my backing, my man. But if you're still on that 1 or 2 years later, go for the cheaper option. It's the same thing. The brain doesn't know the difference between pharmaceutical drugs and street drugs, guys. A lot of people, oh, the doctor said it's okay. No, the doctor knows nothing about addiction. The third leading cause of death in the USA is a medical fraternity. So double check, double check, double check everything that anybody tells you to do. Start dialogue. Get up in the morning. Get a routine going. Routine is so important. Compliment 3P every day, 3 people. When you compliment somebody in the street, dopamine's released in your brain and in their brain. And if you don't think that's possible, guys, next time you're in a built-up area of people, sneakers are always the best. Find somebody walking past with a pair of nice sneakers and go, hey, man, nice sneakers. Hey, man, nice. Forwards. Mm-hmm. Watch it. You'll go, oh, thank you. And as he walks past you watching, he's going to look down at his shoes at least 2 to 3 times. Now you've just made his day. When he goes home to the girlfriend or wife, because he's in a good mood and she's in a good mood. And the ripple effect is phenomenal. So get out of this, guys, and be of service to somebody else. Don't be selfish, be selfless, and you will start to feel amazing. And of course, depression, bipolar, whatever it is you're suffering from, addiction, whatever that addiction looks like for you, start dialogue with somebody. Everybody can recover. Like I am a recovered alcoholic and addict. Everybody has the capability, unless you have brain damage, to recover and get your life back, period.
I find it so interesting that you mentioned just saying a little comment can, you know, change somebody's day, make someone's life better. I remember we did an interview in LA and he was homeless at one point. And what he said that changed him was this one office lady that came by and just said something nice in the street. And that's when he realized, he said, oh, this, like, he actually felt heard and seen, which he hadn't felt in months. So I think that's very important to acknowledge people. You never know what they're going through. You never know when was the last time they got a compliment over their sneakers. So
appreciate that. So important. So important to do that because, again, you never know what people are going through. You can change somebody's life with 2 words, 3 words. We've done loads. We've been going for over 30 years with 8,000 patients. Trials, test, research. It's all true. Go and look at the internet about all this stuff. You probably find me as the leading source. But yeah, very important, guys.
What advice would you give someone, or let's make it interesting, what advice would you give your past self?
Oh, Michelle. Okay. As a child, don't take that drink at the age of 9 would be one. Well, secondly, I hate to spoil the ending, but everything's going to be okay. Because what I found with my journey, when I was homeless, I hated everybody, God, everybody. I hated it. But when I look back now for doing what I do today, it was like a semester of homework. So I would say, love yourself. Nobody really cares. You've got to put that out because they don't. Everyone thinks we do. Make sure the hair, make sure I'm looking good today. You walk into a room, everybody looks around. You've opened the door. That's why people are looking around. No one's interested. Nobody cares. They've got their own problems. Stop worrying about your appearance. Just because you're overweight does not define who you are. Just because you're colorblind, you're short, you're only 4'8", it doesn't define who you are. Show the world who you are. Find your identity as quick as possible and go change the world.
Yeah. Do you believe that, you know, when I ask this question to a lot of people, this would you change anything from the past? And, you know, the touche answer is, well, it wouldn't be me if I wouldn't have gone through everything I went through. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, it's a great answer, of course, and you never know slight things in the past, but I truly, truly regret losing my children. You know, I fought as hard as I could, but I was an alcoholic and I was homeless and she took them away from me and told them I was dead. So I would have definitely gone back and changed that. And the other thing I would have done is be kinder. Even though I was drinking and I was horrible, you know, I was this monster. I just wished I had the insight to be kinder to people because alcoholics and addicts are very vicious with their tongue and we can kill people with just a few words that we don't really mean. So be kinder to people. And I'm sorry, kids. That you had to go through that. My youngest daughter, 30 years on, I've never seen her. She, as far as she's concerned, I do not exist. my eldest daughter got hold of me 4 years ago on Messenger, God bless Facebook. I went over there, we hugged, she introduced me to my three-month-old granddaughter. And that lady today, that young lady runs my Manchester office in the UK as my lead therapist.
Amazing. Wow. And she went to become a therapist as well.
Yes. We sent her back to college. She'd seen me on TV in England, and that's what prompted the call. So yeah, I'm going to go back to college. You sent her back to college, and she's absolutely killing it right now. So Charlie, girl, great job.
That's awesome. That's amazing. I mean, again, we are who we went through, right? And we can't change anything at this point. So that question doesn't even make sense. But sometimes it's good to, in retrospect, to think about it, right? Like, would have I made different choices? But we didn't have the insight that we had now. So it's almost impossible to know what the impact would have been, or if it would have been a different scenario or a different situation. Correct.
Yeah.
When we talk about the impact that sharing a story like your own story has, how has sharing your own story impacted your clients, your family, your network? I know you're really strong on mental health advocating. How does that impact your world in general?
I think the people that I've been through connect straight away. Our patients go, oh my God, you've been through, oh my God. Because you can tell them things that other people don't know, you know, because the crazy things we do, every other alcoholic and addict does. And we think we're the only ones sometimes, but we're not. I've heard so many stories that are all the same, different scenarios. So that's good. And for other people that hasn't, but are into like health and wellness, they are baffled how I made it through. I tried to commit suicide on 7 occasions on the streets, and on 2 occasions, it worked. I was pronounced dead, and they brought me back to life. I hated them for that. The homelessness, the abandonment on the streets, the not being validated, not being approved by anybody. It was pure isolation and absolutely horrible. But when I tell that story, and then I see where I am today, it's unbelievable. I used to do this when I spoke anywhere. So I'd come on in clothes with paint some vomit on the front, baggy clothes, holes in the shoes, ripped t-shirt, you know, growth here, half, you know, it was just horrible looking. We'd paint a little black eye in here, and I'd tell a story from the streets. And I'd tell, I used to have this, and I used to have children, and I'd tell that story. And you could see people sobbing in the audience, thinking, oh my God, what's his life come to? And then we have an interlude. I get shaved, all the makeup comes out, I put a suit on, all my scrubs, and then the stage is there, and it's, you know, they introduce me to Robert Kelly to begin with. Second half, they go, please welcome back Dr. Rob Kelly. And I walk on, and you should see the audience. It's like, if I didn't have that story, I couldn't be who I am today. And by telling that story, it gives people hope, because that's what it's all about. I want you to be happier than me. I want you to earn more money than me. I want you to do more TV, more books than me. I want you to be successful, because I can do it. And the old saying, if I can do it, anybody can do it. That's not true. You've got to want this. You've got to want to change your life. You're going to want to become a better person, addiction or not. You know, 90% of our work right now is not alcoholic or addict. It's just people want to better their lives because they're stuck in this childhood trauma routine that's humdrum. If you're not changing the world on a daily basis, what the are you doing? That's the question I want everybody to ask themselves. What are you doing? You know, you just sat on the couch doing nothing. When's the last time you did something for somebody? Please tell me. They can't. Go out, be of service.
Like, what is your greater purpose in life? Right? And they always suggest serving.
Yeah, exactly. I believe everybody is born with a niche for this earth. Go find that niche, whether that be music, ballet, whether that be mentoring, we become a doctor, become whatever it is, because somebody out there is waiting for you to get your shit together so you can save their life. Because I've seen it millions of times with people I've worked with, millions of times, where once they get involved, they just become better fathers, better mothers, you know, so on and so forth. But this is what life's about. Like, you are not meant to sit at home in your bedroom feeling sorry for yourself. You are not meant to sit in a one-bedroom apartment not being able to pay the rent. You are not meant for that. You are meant to succeed. You have a circuitry in your brain from birth to succeed. So every single neural pathway you need right now to be successful, whatever that looks like for you, is already in your brain. It's already there. Connect them flailing your pathways. Oh, I'm not good enough. Pathways. Connect them.
You talk about success for everyone. Obviously, everybody has a different meaning of success. From your addiction journey, how do you define success in your ongoing journey? And what insights can you offer to our listeners on their own paths of recovery?
Michelle, you are beautiful. Thank you for asking that question. I always thought it was money. You know, when I come to Highland Park, Dallas, 18 years ago, I wanted to build an empire because I knew if I drove the new 911, if I lived in Highland Park, if our offices was, you know, the floor in a medical building, but you know, one morning I got up and I'm not sure it was this. It's $45,000 watch, and I got into a $180,000 car. I was wearing the best clothes. I was driving to the office, and I was the most miserable, sad person in the world. Mm-hmm. Then I realized it wasn't the money. So try and find, for me, trying to find was connecting with my daughter again, you know, connecting with honest, true friends that live in the same world as me. And I don't mean in a wealthy world. I mean in a psychologically healthy world where you can share, laugh as much as possible, do silly things. I dance. My wife she's cringy sometimes. I dance in bars. I do silly stuff when I'm on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, just have fun. I have to have fun every single day. And I think that's the key. Have fun, share the fun. You know, yeah. But it's definitely the money, guys. Now, I've been rich and I've been poor on four occasions.
Of course.
I choose rich every time. Don't get me wrong, you know, but it will not. If you're looking for money to make you happy, it's never going to happen. It's an inside job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all got to pay the rent, but it doesn't mean you. That's equal to success. And again, everybody has a different meaning, but it has been proven many times. Money is not. That's why we have a lot of celebrities. A lot of money that are not happy.
I've met most of them, I must admit. Yeah, not happy.
Yes.
You know, you're walking into a $19 million house and you're seeing mayhem in the house and sadness and abandonment and, you know, stuff like that. It's if you think yours is the only house, guys, and the rich people live different, no, don't even think that for a second. I've seen more sadness in $20 million houses than I have on the project houses sometimes.
Yeah. It is. That is how it is, because I've seen it too. And again, at the end of the day, it's not about how much money you make. It's about the family and what happens inside the home, trauma, no trauma. To finish our conversation, I wanted to wrap things up. So we discussed how trauma goes hand in hand with addiction. We talked about having an addictive personality. Is there any way to avoid getting to an addiction pattern if you have the trauma? Because sometimes we can't avoid the trauma, right? Because it just happened. It might just happen to us for whatever reason. But is there any way to be aware after the trauma so we avoid that path of addiction?
That's down to parents, guys. Parents, I'm talking to you right now. Start dialogue with your kids. You know, look, now listen, when we say childhood trauma, it's not the parents' fault or the caregiver's fault. They don't know. It's generational, passed down, behavioral, passed down. Like, dad used to do this, so I'm going to do this. Someone needs to break the chain, but it's no one's problem. But if you're honest with your kids growing up and you went through bad times, you need to talk to them about that. You need to tell them at the age of 8 and 9 that there's addiction or alcoholism in the family system and just beware. When we do that, we're knowledgeable. It's like, I don't have a problem with the whole of America legalizing weed. I got no problems with that at all. I've never seen anybody weed beat up, smash people, throw things. Never. But, and here's the but, just inform people what it's really about. Just inform any damages that could happen. Just be open and clear with it, you know? Same with children. Just be open with it. Well, what age is a good age?
Yeah, start that's another
7,
question.
9, yeah. Start early, you know. Kids are very resilient. They'll remember that stuff. And can you imagine going to take the first hit or something with some of the friends in a bar somewhere and a story comes back and you told them that there's addiction in the family? That one, no, I'm walking away, could save that kid's life. But we don't want to talk about it because, you know, it's still that black, dark side of human beings that nobody talks about. But like I said, everybody knows somebody. And I can tell you from experience, because I probably work with them, that all your heroes, let's say you have 10 heroes and 2 people that you look up to that you don't know. I reckon 9 of them are alcohol and drugs, childhood trauma, and definitely the other 2 are. We've all got our secrets. We've all got our children. We've all got our, you know, things that we have to get over. Stop trying to be perfect. Just be perfectly imperfect.
Yeah. I love that. Perfect closure. Be perfectly imperfect. Title of the next book.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you for having this very insightful information, for sharing your story, and for making time for us, regardless of the technical difficulties. But yeah,
of course.
Thank you. Thank you for everything. And I love what you're doing. I love that you're advocating all the way from the other part of the world. And I really think I learned a lot. I do think I agree with you how trauma goes hand in hand with addiction. We'll see what the people have to say. Let's see if they have a different opinion. Right. Guys, leave us a comment. Definitely. Let us know your thoughts, okay?
Yes, please. Thank you, Michelle. You're awesome.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I'll see you guys next week. This was Dr. Rob Kelly.